So what can I do for you, Mayor?
Two more girls are gone. We just ask around, see if anyone suspicious been on the streets trying to pick them up.
Yeah, sure.
I brought you a gift basket. Hoagies from La Spada's, cheesesteaks from Coco's.
I know you like her. I see the way you look at her.
Mayor, I'm showing you all of my cards, and you are showing me none.
I'm trying to help you out here.
Help me? Or help yourself?
That's that priest I was telling you about.
Hey, Father, I knew you got yourself a little altar girl. Yo, I'm talking to you, pedophile.
You remember anything about the vehicle?
What can you tell us about him? He smoked Winston's?
Mayor.
I can feel it happening, yeah. Like panic, like this expectation from people to be something I don't think I'm good enough to be.
Maybe you could be my mom for a second.
What's going on?
I didn't know when you asked me before. I swear I didn't know.
What didn't you know?
So what did you say to that detective?
Nothing.
Three of us, we're joined together forever. So why don't you get in the car?
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of Easttown and Down, a Mayor of Easttown podcast recap show. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth, and joined by me, as always, is a very lovely and talented Leah Bonema. How are you today, Leah?
Oh, delighted to be here. Knocked out from last night's episode, which I just rewatched again. Still reeling.
Episode 5, Illusions. What do you think this meant?
The title.
What do you think the title of this meant? Episode 5.
I think it had to do with sort of the stories that everybody presents versus the things that are actually happening. Like Colin Zabel, you know, as being presented as this guy that solves this case. We find out that he's not. We find out that Mayor's father was presented as this great detective, you know, killed himself. Obviously, he can still be this great detective and kill himself. Mayor tells him that she did this other bad thing. I think it's sort of like shattering everybody's illusions.
Yeah. When I was a freshman in high school, I was one of the principal characters in a play called Pippin. And it was a musical. It was a spring musical. And one of the lines in the first, the main song, the song was called Magic to Do. And it was like one of the lines in the song was illusions, fantasies to study. And then my part was battles, barbarous and bloody. And it's like, yeah, okay, these illusions are fantasies that maybe if you shine up more of a light on them, there's some bullshit behind it. I don't know. I just threw that out there. That's a random thing I threw out.
No, I really would like to see you in a full musical. That's actually where that took me. A,
oh.
I think, yes, great reference and great point. And B, I would love to see you in a musical.
Oh, just thank from your lips to God's ears. Yeah, let's just hope the show that I was in that closed because of COVID will come back and I'll at least be in that one. And then we'll take it from there. I'm not greedy, you know.
I'll put that out in the universe.
Yeah. I think you're absolutely right. I think it's just you, if you look beneath the veneer of any family in Easttown, you're bound to find something. I just think it's all a big subterfuge from the creator, Brad Inglesby, to just be like, I'm just showing you all this shit to distract you from what's really going on. And all these red herrings, basically.
Well, they're all things that people are hiding, but a lot of them have nothing to do with the actual murder. Oh, and the other illusion being the husband having an affair.
Yeah.
They would come off as this like family that's got it together.
Three deaths in this one.
Woo! This one was heavy. I mean, they just keep getting piled on.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll get into it. We'll get into it. Do you want to start now? You want to just like, let's get into it. Let's jump in. So we open on a car crashed into a telephone pole.
We just open on it. We're starting with it.
It's a beautiful shot. I have to say so. If I could say so myself, really great shot. Which causes the lights to go out all over town. And then we see Mayor brushing her teeth. Drew is calling for Gran. And Drew left his turtle out. And so the turtle, Mayor's basically concerned it's going to shit all over the place.
Which Helen, they will. I had a turtle and they shit like nobody's business.
Really?
Yeah.
But it doesn't move that fast though, right?
No, but that.
But it's still shit.
Body's moving.
Yeah, I'm figuring it probably doesn't go too far. First funny moment in the show, right at the top, Helen apologizes to Drew because he said, sorry that Gran said shit. I thought that was hilarious. And then kind of super quick, the lights are down less than 5 minutes and Frank's over at the house.
Oh, he's ready to be helpful.
Boop, yeah, boop. With batteries. And we find out the reason a little later that I think's the reason later on. And then we cut to the Ross residence. And Lori's walking through the hallway. The door's cracked open to Ryan's room. And John is talking to Ryan, basically saying, you know, hey, this is our secret, Ryan. It's our secret. And Lori's like, what?
Okay. You can tell it's not like a surprise party. Or,
yeah. Yeah.
Oh, you got your mom a horse. It's not one of those fun secrets.
Right. It's very solemn and somber. And then we cut to the scene of the accident. Trammell, is it a hemophobe? You're afraid of blood? I don't know. He's afraid of blood. He's investigating the crash, and the pocketbook falls out of the driver's seat. And he picks up the pocketbook, looks at the ID in her purse, and it is Betty Carroll. And I wrote, Betty Carroll's fucking dead in all caps. I guess maybe we'll say, yeah, it's just like, wow. What? I was just like, wow. In the first, in less than 10 minutes, probably less than five. Yeah, less than 10. Before the title card, we find out that she's dead. And we'll talk about like how she died. Later on, your thoughts on when you found out that Betty Carroll was dead?
Well, I'm glad that policeman came back because he has that such funny storyline of being afraid of blood. And yeah, you're like, here's your chance to, you know, call it in, even though you hate the blood. And, mm-hmm. you know, you're just rooting for him there. And I loved that, like you said, Mayor's ex-husband just shows right up. You know what I mean? And I think, you know, we find out more later, but it shows regardless of what happens between him and Mayor, those are his kids.
Yeah.
And he wants to make sure that everybody's okay. And he's the guy who's got, oh, I have the backup batteries ready. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. He's like, here I am. So, and then I also thought it was, as the episodes are going along, we can see Mayor and her mom and Siobhan all working together.
Yeah.
To like make things more and more functional.
Right. Yeah.
And then Betty Carroll, you're like, you know, obviously it doesn't have to do with the other murders. It's just
sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we cut to, oh yeah. Yeah. So he's, and then we cut to the, back to the,
bring up, obviously, like we know that Lori's about to find out something that her husband's been doing, and now very unhealthy. He's asking his son to keep a secret.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not fair.
Yeah. So we're like, we're going to learn what this thing is that I didn't think was related to the murder, but you know, it's going to be like another layer of things people are hiding.
Yeah. Yeah.
So do you think we're going to find out that, do you think the woman is going to be important who it is? I don't think so. Right.
The woman
that he's having an affair with.
I don't know. I don't think it really is. I don't think that's the point. Cause I think it's a, if it's the same woman, it probably doesn't have anything to do with, I don't think it has anything to do with side door.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I just think it's somebody in town or somebody he's had a, he's previously, you know, fooled around with.
Yeah. It seems like it, the way it's presented, it's an adult woman. It's not like one of these like teenagers on this app.
Right. Now, Billy, I mean, that's another question.
Billy.
Another story.
I knew it. I knew this it.
Shady looking ass.
Shady, shady.
So we go back to Mayor's house, and Frank is sitting at the table in the kitchen with Siobhan, and he asks how she's doing, and you know she kind of asks how they just have like a heart to heart talk. Frank is like, you know, hey, I can't rely. I've been ignoring you with all the shit that me and Mayor got going on. And I'm not really checking in on you like I'm supposed to be doing, and I'm going to be better at that, basically. And Siobhan's understanding, and she opens up and says, I met somebody. Old ass Anne. Predator. Hot Predator Anne from the local college.
I thought that was a nice scene with Dad being like, you know, I'm aware. You could tell like he wants to be a good dad, and you know, he's trying to be honest and upfront and realize that maybe he ignored, you know, he knew that because Siobhan was a responsible person, he didn't have to check on her, and now he's like, that was wrong, and you know, how are you? And I just thought that was a good scene.
Check on your strong daughter.
Yeah.
You know how they say check on your strong friends. Yeah. Good scene. Glad that she was acknowledged in that way, because Mayor probably doesn't have it in her to say that. Like, we've talked about this in past episodes, that she's not gonna really say that. Maybe after therapy she probably will, but you know that she loves her. So all right, so Mayor's looking for the turtle. She stumbles on, she doesn't literally stumble, but she sees Siobhan's laptop open. And it's her doc about Kevin, and it's his birthday at the time when he's a little kid, and it's August 14th is his birthday. I don't know what kind of significance that had. That's not the same thing that's on the locket, I don't think. It's not. Or is it? It's not.
No, because it was 3-something.
Yeah, okay, good. Just making sure. Yeah, so she sees that, and she... Then we cut to her driving to therapy, which we will later in a couple seconds find out that she's driving to therapy. We get the title card. She's in therapy, and she tells Gail, the psychiatrist, that she is that Kevin was diagnosed with Tourette's at age 8, and mood disorder runs in the family. You know, they had him on all different types of drugs, and she mentioned that her dad would get depressed. And when he got depressed, he used to get sent away to his brothers on Drexel Hill until he was strong enough to come back. And Gail asked her if she was ever depressed herself. And she admits to being depressed after Siobhan was born. And Kevin started having trouble a little after that. And I was talking to you last night, and I was like, oh, I bet her dad killed herself. And he said, oh, well, how did your dad deal with it? And she said, right, he killed himself, he shot himself, and when she was 13. We knew prior that in a prior episode that her dad died, was it episode 3? And I think episode 3 we find out that we see that picture of her dad
in the
when she turns in her badge. So that's at the end of episode 3. Anyway, all right. And she asks if mental illness is something that you inherit. And Gail says, well, she's, you know, been looking in magazines and books and stuff, trying to figure that out. And Gail asks her what has she been looking for when she reads those articles? And she says she's looking for hope that her grandson won't turn out like her dad or Kevin. And she's really worried about it. In fact, she's terrified. Your thoughts, Leah?
That this was a really a good scene. Like, we learn a lot about, I feel like, about Mara's mom. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Because she says, you know, my mom used to send my dad away. And I think it was because she was protecting the kids.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then she says, when Mara says, oh, I was depressed when she first had Siobhan and they were having trouble with Kevin. And she's like, but I didn't want to put that on my mom, mm-hmm. you know, because my mom never put up with that. So you can tell that there was like all these like strong women who haven't learned how who have, feel like they have to shoulder everything themselves.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, it did feel like as soon as that they were leading up to her dad killing mm-hmm. himself. And then I loved how the psychiatrist said, when Mara said, oh, I've been reading these articles, and she asked, what are you looking for when you read the articles? I just mm-hmm. think that's such a great comment, because I think we all know when we like search for things, we're reading things, but it's such a interesting to be like, what did you want from that?
Mm-hmm.
Why were you doing that? And I assumed that she was either going to say like that it wasn't my fault, or, you know, that I don't want that my grandkid will get it. You know what I mean? It's interesting to see what people are hoping to find. I thought that was just such a great, great writing, that the psychiatrist would be like, what did you want to take away from this? Because it's such an insightful thing about life.
Mm-hmm. It's a great scene. Like, she's opening up more, and
feels like she's really trying, right?
She is trying. And you would think, like, in the episode in last week, that even though I knew she was going to open up, she just had that wall in the first meeting. She had a wall up, but she's definitely going to work through it, you know?
I think that video of Kevin when he was a little kid rocked her.
Yeah.
And then I also think it's a really good psychiatrist. Like, she sort of just, like, isn't, you know, pushy, or mm-hmm. just asking questions.
And she said, because like that, we talked about it last week, where she was just like, all right, just okay, let me do my job.
Yeah. You know? And she said, when Mara said her dad killed herself, and she asked her why, and then why do you think? And she said, it felt like I wasn't enough, which mm-hmm. is like so hard that a kid would think that. And then the psychiatrist says, that's so much to carry. You know what I mean? I just feel like she responds to Mara in this very empathetic way, but not too much where Mare would be like, fuck off, I don't need, you know.
I love that you mentioned that, because that's the second person that's told her that.
Why did I almost just say Billy Ray Cyrus? Guy Pierce.
Yeah, Guy Pierce told her last week, or Richard in the show. It's so fun. Yeah, he tells her that, and you know, that's the second person.
And Anne tells Siobhan that.
Yeah.
Are you carrying everybody else?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or a little different version of it, but similar. It's like all the women in that family are doing it.
Mm-hmm. And Mare's an only child. Seemingly. I think. Yeah, it seems like she's the only child. All right. So we are back at Mare's house, and we find through exposition. I love how they do this. Betty had a heart attack going out for cereal the night before, and Helen is saying that Cheerios killed her just because she wanted to go get some Cheerios. Cheerios are supposed to be heart healthy. And then Mare's like, oh, Lord, she's gonna have that heart attack anyway. And, you know, it's just basically just like a sad thing. They kind of laugh about it, but I don't think they're being malicious, mm-mm. but it's just like she just,
not at all.
The shit just happens, you know. And so Lori's there, Billy's there, Ryan's there watching a game. Ryan is playing like a maybe Nintendo Switch or some video game with
DJ
Drew.
No, Drew. So many D's.
I know, it's a lot of D's. Drew. So they're all probably like watching a game or something.
Yeah, they're watching a game.
Yeah. and having some Rolling Rocks. Billy, shady ass Billy, gets up and says, "Oh, anybody need a beer?" He goes away, and Lori's just staring at Ryan, looking good in that Philadelphia Philly shirt and that cardigan. I just like how it looked on her. And she's, you know, looking. And then we cut to Anne, and everybody's at the crib. Anne is getting Lori's daughter, Moira, ready for the dance. And she tells Siobhan that about this teacher who was a professor at Cal Berkeley her freshman year, media lab professor Meg Frawley, who just became the head of media studies at Cal. And Siobhan's like, "Oh, Cal Berkeley." She's like, "Yeah." He's like, you can move away. You don't have to be, you know, tethered to Easttown," which I don't know. Like, Mayor wants her to go away. Like, Mayor wants her to have a better life. That's why she sends her to that school, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't get the feeling that Mayor wants her to, you know, like, "Oh, stay here." I think it's more because of Siobhan feels like obligated to stay.
Yeah, I think her mom would be like, go.
Yeah, do live your life.
Siobhan just feels responsible.
Yeah, yeah. And she seems like a good kid, or is she? I think she is. Yes,
she is. I also think how Anne's like, just talk to her for 5 minutes. And if you don't like it,
yeah,
don't worry about it. But like, you have this talent, you know?
Right.
Don't...
Yeah.
And they have that cute little flirty scene.
Yeah, like, it was cute.
What are you going to do to make up for it?
She's like, "Babe." Was she being super familiar or no? Is Anne clingy or no? Or is
it just they're dating? They're dating.
Okay. "Babe." I was like, "All right. Whatever. Okay." I just wanted to confirm that with you.
I just felt, you know, when you're like in the beginning of a relationship.
"Babe." Okay.
When you like hold hands in the air, you know what I mean? And you're like, "Ah," you know,
yeah.
Like
in the... Sure. Oh, sure. Yeah, so that was that. We're back, we're still at Mayor's house, and we go, you know, there we cut to them. I kind of went early describing Billy going to get the beer, and then we're back with Kenny and Lori and Helen all around the TV watching the game. Kenny's in jail.
Bring up how they went up to see Kenny.
Lori and John talk about how they went to see Kenny in jail, and that Kenny wants the Rosses to take custody over DJ. And Mayor's like, "Really? Y'all gonna do this?" She's like, "Well, I mean, you know, next to Ken and all that."
And Mayor, like, "We're gonna think about it.
They're gonna, yeah." They said they're gonna think about it. Right. Absolutely. And Mayor asks if they think Kenny ever hit Aaron. She says, "Nah, we don't know, but like Kenny's wife Rachel died, so she died from leukemia, and she's like, you know, John says Aaron's tough, just like Rachel, you know, she had leukemia and didn't tell anybody until she went to hospice, you know, so it's like, you know, we find that after Rachel's death, Kenny was drinking a lot. So Aaron moved in with Billy."
And Mayor's eyes just like go boom.
Mayor was like, "Oh shit." And yeah. And Billy was like, "Yeah, you know, he was drinking." And so I built her fixed up a room in the basement. And she's just there. She was just there for 3 weeks. And Lori's like, "Oh, I thought she was there for a couple of months." Lori was like, and Billy was looking at like, "Bitch, are you, what are you doing?" Yeah, telling this, like, shit.
Shut up.
This Lori motherfucker.
Like, didn't even notice what's happening.
He was shook. And it's almost like Lori was trying. I don't know if she was trying to blow up the spot, but I think it was just natural conversation. You could look at it in at least in those two ways, whether she was trying to put Billy on the spot or just like, you know,
I kind of didn't think she was. I think she was being like, oh no, that wasn't right. That you were there for like 3 months. But it'd be interesting if she was being like, oh, she was there. And it was, and he's, and I was like, well, how long ago was it? And it's just exactly how old that kid is.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was, did he say like that was a long, did he say either
like,
that was
like three-ish years ago? And you're like, oh, like the kid.
Yeah, exactly. Like DJ, you piece of shit. Yeah, Billy was shook and he was like, I gotta go to a fundraiser. You just asked everybody, you just cracked open a brand new beer, a fresh bottle of beer, a Rolling Rock, and you're out.
Well, I also love how like when Mayor started asking questions, he's like staring at the TV, like all of a sudden it's like so important, and he's like, what? I don't remember.
Yeah. I love how exposition was. The exposition of this scene, it was a really good scene. I was like, oh shit. I was typing, like I was like, oh shit.
And then we look at the bottle of Rolling Rock. It's like Amir's bottling that and putting it in a Ziploc bag. You know what I mean?
You think what everybody's saying is like the DNA.
For sure.
It's either it's gotta be DNA or like you just cracked open a fresh beer and now you're running out. Now you gotta go.
I think she put that in a Ziploc bag.
Probably.
If anybody did anything, why are you leaving bottles around where your mouth was on? You know what I mean?
He's not thinking about
questioning,
that.
If somebody, you go over to somebody's house and they're asking you questions, don't even touch a cup. You know what I mean?
He ain't smart like that. He's not.
Well, he's building basements to have sex with underage girls. He's got, you know. I'm sure it wasn't.
No, that's
premeditated.
That's Potts, who we find out a little later. Okay, so we're next scene.
No, but I mean, Aaron was underage and at his house.
Oh yeah, yeah. I thought you meant like this. Oh, you think Billy is involved with Side Door?
No, no, no. I'm saying Billy is the father of Aaron's child.
Yes, I agree with you. I think he is.
So, I mean, he knows that he had an underage girl in his house and had sex with her, which is illegal, in which case you start being like, take your beer cans with you. You pedophile.
Yeah.
I mean, no, I want him to get caught. I'm just saying.
Oh, he's going to get caught. Based on, we'll talk.
I didn't
about
like
it
him from the first episode
because he looks shady as fuck.
So shady with his like looking in the other direction.
Yeah,
and I just kept calling him John by mistake. But I got the names mixed up.
John is Lori's husband. Dylan and Brianna. Next scene. Dylan and Brianna are talking about DJ. Brianna's lawyer thinks she can plead down to a misdemeanor from beating up Aaron. She's not going to college next year because of her legal trouble. And she's thinking maybe she can go to beauty school and start doing rich people's hair in Bryn Mawr, I think.
Yeah.
And he tells her, basically, he's like, you know, hey, you know, since we're dating 2 months before all this happened, you know, you don't have to come around if you don't want to. And Brianna, which I really want your thoughts on this, where Brianna's like, oh, so yeah, you know, now you weren't in bed all night. And he was like, maybe I was looking after DJ. And she was like, nope, I didn't see you there either. Maybe I was smoking outside. Nope, I didn't see you there. You weren't at the house. Well, get the fuck out of here then.
Yeah.
Basically. I don't know. Like, she basically wants her to. He basically wants her to leave and just get away, get out of his life. But Brianna, in a way to try to stay with him, is like, I know where you were. I know you weren't at the house.
I think she was like, I'm keeping your secrets.
Yeah.
I mean, here's this girl who, this is the first time I actually feel empathetic towards her. You know what I mean? She just comes off as a crazy bitch, but you see her, she's like went head over heels for this guy. Acted. And obviously it's of her own personal, she beat up Aaron, she was rude, she was but here she is, you know, she's not going to go to college, she's not going to have the life she wants. She I think is thinking about the long-term effects of her actions.
Yeah.
And this guy is just like throwing back his bangs like a fucking asshole and is having no repercussion. Well, he got shot, but I mean, he's, you know, he's never like, sorry, you're not going to get to go to college, or, you know what I mean? And then she's like, he's like, you don't have to come around anymore, which could be taken in two ways, where he was like, hey, this is a lot for a person to take on, but she did take it on. So mm-hmm. then she's like, I know that you're lying and I kept your secret. And then he's like, well, get the fuck out.
Not after we see the shit that he's up to. It doesn't track from, not for me, Leah. It doesn't track. It doesn't track.
He's garbage.
He's a piece of shit. Cause we did feel like, okay. Cause I said it last week. Okay. Now we see him vulnerable and, you know, but now we know that there's more to it. And it's almost like after we know what's going to happen, it's like now he's kind of hiding in plain sight.
Well, it's like he's getting women to do his dirty work.
Yeah.
And it's the bang flicking that really, for me, put me over the edge. you're just like, this fucking kid is garbage. He's so used to getting what he wants. He has parents that fucking spoil him. They don't, you know what I mean? Girl's like, I love you, I'm holding your secrets. This other girl was like, I just want to take care of your kid, even though it wasn't his kid. And then obviously we saw the anger in him when he almost suffocated that child.
Yeah.
Which he didn't do, but we all saw it.
I think he was thinking it. Yeah, he was thinking it.
He's a piece of shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Who only cares about himself.
Because we're going to, there, he's going to, Mare's going to get him. Don't worry.
Whew, I hope so.
She is. I mean,
it looks like Kenny was right.
If he didn't kill Aaron, it's something, he's hiding something. I mean, in the promo for episode 6, he's asking for a lawyer. You know, I mean, and he's being an asshole. So I think you're absolutely right. I love that you pointed this out. How Brianna's like thinking about the rest of her life, acting on that moment. I gotta highlight this actress. Forgive me, folks, but I want to highlight her, Brianna Mackenzie Lansing. That's a great scene because she's like, I'm gonna have to do people's hair and work in Bryn Mawr and. Yeah, like she sees her life ahead of going, like she sees her life right before her. The rest of her life is almost planned out because quote unquote, in a town like that, you're probably limited in a lot of ways.
I also feel like being from a town like that, there's a lot of things where it's like, as like young girls, you get caught up with like the older boys wanting to be their favorite. And then you do stupid shit for them. That's so fucking stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trash.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just like kind of sad. And then, like you said, that is the one scene where you do have empathy for her.
Yeah.
You know, but before when you're.
She was horrible. She was still horrible.
Yeah.
But now you see maybe what some of those motivations were. Because it was to sort of be loved.
Because I wonder what her family situations, like her parents run that restaurant,
Dorasso's,
and it's like, you know, you wonder that is she kind of spoiled, is she kind of a brat?
Well, they obviously, like, her dad obviously has her back first.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Well, I mean, she obviously is somewhat spoiled. She thought she could get away with
beating up
behavior
Aaron.
And like being mean to a single underage mom, just, it's like, why would you punch down? You know what I mean? This girl's already going through it. She's trying to take care of a kid.
Like, that could easily be you.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Talking to you about it, it's an even better scene than I thought. Just like talking about it now. Okay. So he tells her, get the fuck out of here. Aaron and Missy are at the bar, trapped in the soundproof room. Missy is in withdrawal from the opioids. Katie and Missy. Sorry, folks. I wrote down Aaron. Katie and Missy are at in the soundproof trap place hiding. They're trapped in the upstairs room. Missy is in withdrawal. Katie is telling her about a girl named Hillary who helped her when she was going through withdrawal until she got pregnant by the kidnapper. And one day, and he didn't like that. So one day she was gone. The door opens up and she gets like bound, like tied up, bound. So apparently there before her, before Katie, there was another girl. Your thoughts, Leah?
Well, and she has like the whole thing down. Like when he comes in, you just fucking do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Get it done with. She's helping the girl out. You know, I think it sets up how we see that, you know, we learn about this other girl. We learn that how it works there on the day to day, and that she, you know, is to a point where she doesn't even fight him when he comes in. She just stands up, turns around. You know what I mean?
It's like you were talking about Room a couple weeks ago.
I wasn't.
You weren't?
No, I haven't seen that.
Oh, okay. Why did I? Maybe I was talking to somebody else, but it's definitely reminiscent of the Brie Larson flick that she won an Oscar for. Room. This woman's been kidnapped. She's been in there for years. She gets pregnant, has a kid. And she's raising the kid in captivity.
Insane.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, that's about it. That's the kind of what we get from that scene. Mare meets up with Tammy, who's kind of like an old colleague. Is she just a lady of the night?
She's a lady of the night, yeah.
She's a lady of the night that's kind of like an OG. They meet at a diner. Mare is showing her some photos of girls, and she recognizes Missy. And she's like, I've seen that girl, and I've seen her down at the Harrah's down by the river in a van down. No, sorry. sorry. I was reaching for that. It was better in my head. But yeah, so she just gives her information. What did you think about this? This is big. This is just showing Mare's expertise as a good cop, as a great detective.
She knows her people. She knows. Yeah. She obviously cares about her people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? She's like, how's your grandkids? And they have, you know, she's not judgy. She's like, everybody's just making a living. You know what I mean? And, that I feel like that lady was like, you know, now she says she just has a few older gentlemen that she visits to tickle their balls once a week or whatever. And she gets to spend more time with her kids.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
And then so she goes down and checks on the younger girls. And like you said, it was just Mare putting the word out, looking for more information. And I think, you know, also shows Mare's that she does really care about people.
Right.
Which we know. But I mean, it's just more of that.
Gruff exterior. She's just got that gruff exterior. Yeah. And this is going to pay off later, that meeting.
It also made me think about, totally unrelated, being from a small town. Like, it's just such a obviously must be everywhere job. The lady of the night who goes around to like the older men's, probably widowed men's houses and tickles their balls. And then you want to be like, I wonder if a lot of people that I knew, older women, if they're ladies of the nights and they're going around tickling older men's balls.
There's a really good movie, really solid ass movie. It's a really entertaining watch. Yeah, I'm not saying like it's a movie called Blow the Man Down. You might fuck with it because it's like, I'll put it to you in the chat. But okay. I think it's on Amazon Prime. Blow the Man Down. I'll read you the blurb. Mary Beth and Priscilla Connolly attempt to cover up a gruesome run-in with a dangerous man. To conceal their crime, the sisters must go deep into the criminal underbelly of their hometown uncovering the town's darkest secrets. And it's a small, what do you call it? Do you call it like a seafaring town?
Like a coastal?
A coastal.
Is this the one that was in Maine?
I think so.
I remember seeing the ad for this.
It was filmed in one of the filming locations is Harpswell, Maine.
Interesting.
Cundy's Harbor.
Harpswell. I'll definitely look it up. Also thinking of like Ladies of the Night, nothing violent, nothing nefarious, just like, you know, doing a job, paying their rent, you know, keeping these guys off the streets.
Well, that's what reminded me of that movie, because like it's that's in a small coastal town in Maine. Yeah, you might like it.
I'll check it out.
Yeah. And listeners, you might as well. I might have talked about it on the main feed of the show, on the regular pod. Okay, so we cut to the middle school. Some kids, some asshole. Moira is getting her lunch. Some asshole kid throws food at Moira. Nobody says shit.
Nobody saw it. What is that?
Nobody saw. I know it's a move. It's a show, but like, what the fuck? And Moira is Ryan's sister. Ryan is seething. He picks up his lunch tray and beats the shit out of the kid who threw it.
And threw it twice and laughed.
Yeah, he threw it twice and laughed. And the people at the table were talking shit.
And everybody in the lunchroom, like that guy's table, they laughed, but other people looked uncomfortable, but nobody stopped him or was like, fucking stop it.
Yeah. Yeah.
He deserved a good tray to the head.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So Lori picks him up from school because he obviously gets kicked out of school for fighting, and ask him if it's something, it's what's wrong with him. You talk, you know, she says, does it have something to do with dad? And like, are they keeping a secret? She says, is he doing it again? I'm watching this. I'm like, what the fuck?
What's he doing again?
Yeah. And I'm like, what's he doing? And Ryan runs out of the car into the park. He's crying at a picnic table. And she asks him again. He's crying. And we find out that John's cheating on her again with the same woman as before.
Same woman.
Ain't that some shit?
At first, I was afraid it was, because in the prior scene where Katie Bailey was explaining to the other girl, when he has people over for poker night, mm-hmm. that he comes down and ties them up so they don't make noise.
Right.
And then I was like, oh, is John going to be gambling again? Is that what this is? And then it's back to the poker night. But then I was like, oh, it's just not even related at all to this other thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like this woman that he's like having an affair with.
Right. Yeah. So fucked up cheating on my girl, Lori.
Seems like it's time for me to swoop in.
Hey, I'm from Hackensack. I was just driving through. What's going on with you?
What's going on? That you like Yinglings.
Yeah.
And pizzas.
You want to get a hoagie or something? All right. We cut to the Carroll's residence. It's the wake for Betty.
Oh.
R.I.P. Betty. We're they're at the, you know, everybody's there. The whole town is there practically. Mayor asks Helen if Glenn was a little relieved that Betty's dead, because she basically nagged him all the time. And Helen's like, yo, you can't say that. You can say that when they're alive, but when they're dead, they're all saints. And you just can't say bad things about people. And we get a quick cut of Frank talking to Glenn. And he's like, yeah, I'm sorry. You know, she was a nice lady. He's basically probably lying.
Yeah, he's like struggling to find compliments.
Yeah, she was a nice lady. And then Helen looks over there and she says, here we go with that small town gossip. She says, you know, have you talked?
I thought that you were going to be like, here it is again.
Here it is again. But it's great exposition. It's not. So it's not. Good. It's not me shitting on small towns. It's just.
No, I know it's not at all.
Yeah, it's just
so real, because my mom is always like, you remember you know, so and so from, and then their daughter works over there. Anyway, they heard. I mean, that's so correct.
My mom does that shit too. She called me twice today to tell me some stuff that it was just like, Mom, okay, whatever.
My mom, you know, she loves yard sales. And obviously, well, last summer I went home to help out with stuff during the pandemic and to spend time with them. And then there were some yard sales. My mom loves yard sales and like church sales. And I was nervous about her going out, you know, following all the rules. And I was like, okay, you can go to yard sale, makes you so happy, but I'm going to follow around behind you and Clorox wipe everything. So they got their two vaccines and it's been like the appropriate amount of time. And the church just had like a, you know, you bring your stuff and it raises money for the church. And my mom was telling me all about all the stuff that she got from the church and who offered to help drive her home and who got what from the church sale. And then I was like, I guess I am really small town. I love that stuff. I'm like, what'd you get? Who got what? What, who said what?
I like driving through them. I like small towns.
I like how they always sell fudge. You know what I mean? As soon as you're out of the city, people make fudge. Did you notice that? There's always like fudge makers. The further you get from city, the more fudge makers there are. It's like I never noticed.
No, I
I totally notice when I'm on the road. I'll be like, oh, we're now officially 2.5 hours out of the city. Here's a homemade fudge place.
Yeah. I remember like going to this diner one time in the what is it, it's near Woodstock, but it's like Phoenix, New York or something. Phoenixville, or no, it's not Phoenixville. It was some diner that looked really cool and it ended up not being that great. I followed it on Instagram anyway. Basically, my listeners know like that I dig small towns. Like I love it, you know. I love driving through and seeing like how people do stuff differently than we do in the city. How about that?
Yeah. Or, I mean, obviously I'm a big city girl now.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You're in the second largest city in the country now? New York, LA, Chicago.
Is that the order?
I think.
I did New York.
New York. Working
my way through the different environmental, you know, I was like, I did the city. Now I want to do a place with palm trees.
Yeah, you're doing it. You're doing the right thing. Yeah, small town gossip. Helen says, hey, have you talked to Frank? Have you talked to Frank lately? And Mayor's like, no. And she says, well, you know, I talked to Karen Comiskey's daughter who works at the Springton Inn. And she said that Faye was supposed to look at the reception hall. And she never showed up. And Mayor was like, oh, shit. Then Mr. Carroll gets on the steps and he's trying to get people's attention. It takes him 3 times. And he makes this announcement and basically he's got to get this off his chest. He says, I had an affair with Helen Fahey. And Helen almost chokes on her food. And so does Mayor. And then we just get this quick cut to Mayor laughing her ass off at Helen. And she's just like, oh my gosh, she's just having the time of her life. And Helen calls, he's like, who makes a smacked ass comment like that? And if you know, just, it was only 2-3 times, or you know, like she hooked up with him a bunch of times. A few times. And yeah. That's the biggest moment of levity, I would say, in this episode.
And they needed to give it to us. I'm so glad they did. Also, it was like the perfect edit because they cut to her laughing right when I started laughing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It was just such a good, it was such a good release. I also, in the scene with the wake, I thought it was like whoever does the set design, like they just really nailed it. Like with the pictures going up the stairs, you know what I mean? In these kind of houses and like the bowls that they use on the table. It's those white kind of glass bowls that have blue like flowers on them. Like I always see those.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? At like church dinners or, you know what I mean? I was like, whoever's doing the set design on this is knocking it out of the fucking park.
They know their shit. They know their shit.
Helen is just so funny. She's such a really, it's so subtle and it really is like provides levity in this extremely just hard hitting, constantly upsetting, you know?
Yeah. The Jean Smart is just really, like I said, you know, like depending on, I'm trying to figure out who would be the second lead in this show. And I think it would be Jean Smart.
I think it, so too.
Julianne Nicholson is going to have, she's going to have a moment or two in the show. Like, you know.
Well, it's almost like, can there be 3 second leads?
Yeah. I mean, you know, like the main, it's obviously, you know, Kate Winslet is number one on the call sheet, but yeah. Like.
And then I would say it's her mom.
Yeah. It's like Jean Smart and then probably Julianne Nicholson.
And Colin Zabel.
Well, he's not anymore.
Not anymore. But in those middle three episodes,
he might be a guest star.
Man, yeah. That guy.
Yeah, we'll get to that. He's gonna get nominated. All it takes is that, like that bar scene.
The bar scene was so good.
He's gonna get a nom for that. But I think Jean Smart is just, he's killing it with all the stuff she's been doing recently. This new show, Hacks, that just premiered last week. I watched the first episode and half of the second, and I only stopped watching the second episode because to watch this, but she's great. Basically kind of playing a version of Joan Rivers, you know? I got sucked into,
I meant to watch that. And then I saw, this is like I feel like I've been on tangents. I went on my yard sale tangent.
We do that on this podcast.
I got an email from my mom. Love my mom. Love the yard sales. Can't wait to visit again in yard sale. But then another tangent. I love shows where the environment is a character.
Yeah.
Like the Arctic. And HBO right now has a show on called The Head. And it's people that are in Antarctica. Mm-hmm. And you know, this is the premise. They go away, they come back, everybody's dead, and they have to figure it out. So I got sucked into that. I meant to watch Hacks, but and, you know, I finished it. I knocked it out of the park. I did a good job. So I'll check out Hacks after.
Hey, if you wait till Thursday, you can watch 4 of them. Because I think they might premiere. They each week they might do 2. It's 10 episodes. So they might be like in the next 4 weeks, they'll put out the rest of the episodes.
I think you should watch The Head.
Okay.
You remember that one that we watched we covered, and I'm totally blank on the name. Obviously it was British.
Oh shit, Broadchurch?
No. Broadchurch, I think, is my favorite all-time show. This was a limited
Happy Valley?
No, it was not a full, it was like 6 episodes.
We Did?
Yeah, and it was the woman. Oh my god, I'm blanking on everything. Anyway, it has that feel. No, it wasn't The Killing.
Gillian Anderson.
No.
The Fall? No.
No, that's what I meant. It's not The Fall. That also, I will always remember. Somebody Loved Me. Oh, kills
shit,
me.
Now I'm trying to remember what you, because
he was a cop. And anyway, it has that, it's Scandinavian, even though it's in English, and it has, you know how the Scandinavians are like,
oh shit, Top of the Lake?
No, that's Australian.
Oh, fuck. That was really good too.
That was great. But this show is Scandinavian.
Huh.
And they are a fucked up dark people. I mean, it's more like the further north you go, the more, you know, depressed the writing is.
And it's cold, really cold. I saw it.
No, the one I'm talking about that it reminds me of that feeling is British. You and I, we talked about it on the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
And then anyway, because you liked that, I think you would like the show The Head on HBO.
Okay.
It's just 6 episodes.
Send me a link and I'll add it.
Slow burn.
Slow burn. Okay, where did we leave off? Just laughing in the car. We get back to Mayor's house.
They were like, that's all we're going to give you for levity. Now it's back to,
and that's it. Fuck you guys.
Heartbreak.
Yeah. Back at Mayor's. She's getting ready for a date. We don't know with who yet. Helen says, I thought you were going to wear the red dress with the thing. Mare says, it didn't work. It's too late because he's already at the door. She opens the door. It's Zabel.
It's Zabel.
And he said,
I figured it was.
And he likes how Mare looks. And he says, holy shit. And Mare's like, hey, let's go. Oh, and before she opens the door, she calls Helen a homewrecker.
Yeah. That's right. There was that one more moment because her mom goes, put on the red one. She's like, he's already here. And she's like, okay, then this looks fine. So she was like, bah. So she had to get her back one. Tagged you back.
Loved it. Mare rushes them out. And they're in the car ride. You can see that she's obviously more concerned about the case. And they keep talking about the case. And he says, look, you know, we could get suspended if we keep talking about the case. I could get suspended if I keep talking about the case. With you. He wants to just talk about, you know, he just wants to have small talk. I'll try to see if, and so there's a car ride, and then we switch to, wait, I'm making sure I did this right. Okay, yeah. So then the next scene is Helen and Carrie's over to the house, and they're bathing Drew. And Carrie's asking, she says, why are you being so nice to me? And she says, Helen says, she's afraid. She says, I'm afraid that you'll get custody of the kid and you'll cut Drew out of our life. And Carrie's looking at her like, yeah, I'm probably going to do that. She looks at her like she doesn't really answer, but she seems like the type of person that would do that shit. But the way that I was looking back at this episode, and immediately when the lights went out, Drew was calling for Mare immediately. He was like, Gran?
Yeah.
He loves Mare.
Yeah. And I'm hoping that Carrie will see, because why did I just blank on her name? Grandma is, she's showing Carrie how to like bathe him and like all these things that you learn, and like, you know, being like, to keep him in his routine, like besides them loving him and him loving them back, like he's got this routine that makes him so happy. So I'm hoping that Carrie will, they can sort of come together on their love for him and she'll realize, oh, they've given him a good life, they've given him these, you know, he's got a schedule, he's got people that love him, and then maybe they can find that middle ground together.
Yeah.
And also she was completely honest. She's like, I'm being nice to you because I don't want you to cut me out.
Yeah. Right.
I can't. And she brings up Kevin. She's like, I can't lose another grandchild.
Right. Absolutely. I love that. She's just being Jean Smart's second lead right now, you know. Like she's been carrying the show too. And you know, like she's just been killing it.
She's killing it. And she gives us moments of, you know, familial mother-daughter levity and just like kind of funny behaviors, you know, with like the food hiding in the freezer that refreshes us for all the hard times.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. So we cut to dinner with Zabel, Mare's dinner with Zabel, Mare's date, quote unquote date. She keeps asking Zabel about the case. Zabel gets annoyed. He's trying to talk to her about the food. He said, I was watching a food show. A guy was eating food. I like that.
I laughed so hard when he was like, I'm trying to be more adventurous with food. And I was like, this guy. Oh my God.
Yeah, he sounds like me.
He's trying so hard.
I was like, oh shit. I don't think I've ever sounded like that on a date. No, I don't think I was ever that bad. But
he also sounds like such a young man, and she's like such a woman.
Yeah, she's a grown ass woman. And she's just not, she wants to be there to talk about the case. I think that she's interested in Zabel, but she cares about the case. She likes the fact that, and you can speak to this because you're a woman. Do you think that, we obviously know that she wants to be around him to work on the case, but a part of her is also liking the attention that Zabel is giving her.
And I think also,
what do you think?
He's a nice man.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think she isn't closing off her options to him. I think she's obsessed with the case and not in a negative way. So right. She wants to be around it. And I think she would be direct with him about that. She's not like covertly, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? She wants to be a part of this case. And then, so she wants to talk about it, and that's their shared experience. And I think you're right. She does like the attention from him. Like, he's obviously enamored with her.
Yes.
And then I think, you know, like, she cared about what she wore. You know what I mean? She was like, wanted to dress up and go out on this date. And I think there's a part of her that likes him.
Right.
But
right.
He's like way out of her normal. You know, he's like a young, but he's so good.
He's 12 years younger.
Yeah. And he's like obviously like a good soul, you know, mm-hmm. and I think she's a finds that something about that to be something that she wants to sort of be around. You know?
Maybe she sees some of her dad in him a little bit.
I don't know. I think I get the idea that her dad, I think she likes that there are cops and they share that. But mm-hmm. I get now after this episode, I think her dad was obviously like very moody. And I think that maybe the good parts of his dad.
Yeah. That's what I mean.
And the,
yeah.
But do you think he's stable in a way that other characters in this are not, you know, and he's very kind of like innocent.
Mm-hmm. Do you think he was a good cop?
Her father?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I think too. Yeah. So like, you know, he questions her about going to Deacon Mark's old parish.
And not telling him
and made him look like an idiot. He said, hey, I'm putting all my cards on the table. I'm showing all my cards. You're not showing me anything. And she's like, what are you talking about? She's like, grow up. Like, we're not talking. We stopped talking about the case. And she's like, we just spent a half an hour talking about you stuttering as a kid. And it's like, I was like, damn, Mayor.
She's so to the point.
And it's just. And he's like, well, you know, my mom said before I went to pick you up that Mayor just wants to be around you because of the case. And Mayor doesn't say anything. And he's like, this is where you say that that's not the case. That's not true. And Mayor just gets up and leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just stuck with his maybe he gets a taste that zucchini, whatever it is, a tortellini.
I hope he tries it, you know.
I hope he did, now that we know what happens to him. I hope he got to be adventurous.
She's just like, I'm not doing this. I'm not like telling you what your mom said.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? She's like, what the fuck?
She's like, what the fuck? My mom said. So that ended it. And we're back at the Rosses. John tells Ryan that it's all his fault. Like, they're in the living room. He's got a basket of clothes. I think we get a shot on Lori first in the bedroom, and then you see John holding a basket of clothes
that are in duffel bags,
and Ryan's on the couch playing video games, his portable video game thing, probably a Switch or something. and he's like, I'm sorry, this is not, you know, it's all my fault, and I'm gonna fix it. Ryan doesn't say anything. John leaves, and then Ryan looks up, and it's kind of sad. It's sad.
And I'm glad that John wasn't like, you shouldn't have told her. Like, at least he was like, this is on me.
Yeah, it's like, this is my fault. Then we cut to Mayor back at home, checking in on Drew in the bed. And she gets these flashbacks of Kevin when he was stealing her money, yelling at her and stuff and all that. Then we get to Jess Riley. She gets in a car with Dylan and Sean, one of the kids that was
like, this is horrible.
Yeah, this is like, oh, shit. And he asks what Dylan asked Jess what she told the detective. She said, you know, she was asking about a necklace and she lied to her about Aaron's old hiding place for the journals. I figured as much she did. I was like, oh, there's no journals, you know. And it just makes me wonder what else Dylan was making her do. You know, he asked, what did she tell her? She said nothing, just like you told me to. Sean offers her some weed. She accepts. They go to Aaron's house to get the journals. You know, obviously it's confirmed that she lied to Mayor where they were. They find Dylan finds an envelope with money in it, save for with DJ's ear surgery written on it. Dylan pockets the money.
Garbage man.
Yep. Jess is reading one of the journals. Dylan tells her that they said they weren't going to read anything. Your thoughts?
Well, and then he's like just such trash. Like as this goes, you're just like, he's more and more and more nefarious. Like he's obviously getting her to do stuff. Mm-hmm. He is, he's not going to give that money for DJ's ear surgery. That's for
right.
sure.
Right.
He's like, don't read those. I do think that when he says to her, don't read those journals, that he somehow betrayed himself to her as like a victim in all of this.
Yeah.
Because then, and he doesn't want her to read it because he knows that in those journals, he's going to look bad.
Oh yeah.
So then she sees something and either she takes a picture of it or she pulls out a piece of paper. Uh-huh. And you're like, please, Aaron, be a stand up person for your friend. You know what I mean? Don't let this guy bully you into it. And then
yeah.
you're just like, this guy's just fucking trash.
Yeah. And it just makes me so upset at Jess. It's like, what does she got? You think she was messing with Dylan too?
I think she's being manipulated. Not that she doesn't have her own autonomy and her responsibilities as a human, but I do think it's this like older guy manipulating younger girls to make them feel like, you know, it's cool to be on my side and I'm wrong about this and I'm just trying to protect myself and everybody's against me and, you know, have my back and, you know, you just want to ride in the car with the cool boys and smoke their weed. And she's out of her fucking, you know,
element.
She doesn't, she just wants to be important to these guys who are like obviously like the cool boys in town or whatever.
Yeah, I like that you said that because I was going to reiterate that too when you were saying that, because it's like, yeah, just like you said 10, 15 minutes earlier, that's what it is. And you don't think she's hooking up with him. She was hooking up with him behind Aaron's back or anything.
She may want to hook up with him or maybe they did something, but I think that's being used to manipulate her. But
right.
I do hope that she in the end stands up for her friend. Cause I do believe that she has feelings for Aaron. Like they had those times together.
Yeah.
And I think that she took that thing from the journal because she has good intentions. There's a part of her that knows that this is wrong. And I'm hoping that she takes it to Mayor.
Well, we see a clip and we'll go back to that in a couple minutes. Mayor is, so after that scene, Mayor is driving around. She sees the prowler. She runs after him. And he runs into a house and she tackles his ass on the stairs.
Oh,
and
man.
She turns him over. It's an old dude. And that old dude was fast as shit, though.
He was, but he's also clearly like disorientated when she knocks him over.
And we'll reveal more about him in a bit. So we get the cut to Deacon Mark at a pizza shop, at the local pizza shop. He's getting his order. Some teens who are dining in the restaurant see him and they're like, that's that priest, that's a pedophile, blah blah blah. And then the girl instigates it and they follow him to his car and beat him up basically.
And I feel like at this moment, if it wasn't clear earlier, which I felt like it was starting to become clear, it was very clear that like he didn't do these things, he was just talking to these young women. And it looked bad.
Yeah. Do you think he did the other one?
No.
Okay. I think I agree with you. I think I agree with you. So we go back to, I think this is Dylan's house, right? Or no? Where Sean and Jess and Dylan are they at his house, or are they still in the
I don't know where they're doing this.
Are they in the McMenamin house?
I don't know. I don't think you could burn it at the McMenamin house because people would come back and be why is this burned here?
Why? And nobody's supposed to be in there. Like a neighbor would say, nobody's supposed to be there. So I assumed it was at Dylan's house, but I could be wrong.
It was somewhere that wasn't.
But it wasn't the McMenamin residence. Okay. I just wanted to confirm that with you. So they're burning the journal.
I don't think so, because that would be.
Yeah. So she's reading the journal. They burn the journals at. I'm trying to see if I can read this. What was on this? Because I took a screenshot of it. And this is like from Aaron's journal. She says, thinking all the bad and negative thoughts. Deacon Mark says, thinks he's really nice, but I think he's really nice, but basically she says Deacon Mark is really nice and he's trying to get her to find solace in God, and she just says, no, I don't think that's not gonna work, God probably gave up on her, something to the effect of like she's just being negative, she doesn't think God's gonna help her, and she says, I feel so alone. Nobody understands anything that she's going through. Basically, that's what the page that our pal Jess Riley is reading. She pockets a picture that's in the journal, and Dylan's like, "You still reading? Come on, burn the shit." And so they burn it. And then what do you think about that? What do you think?
Well, I guess I skipped. That's what I was saying when I'm hoping that was Aaron's friendship. Her friendship for Aaron coming out, that she's going to do the right thing. And I mean, I guess it could be at the McMenamins, but that would be stupid to burn something there. That doesn't actually mean that they wouldn't do it because they are teenagers.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I just initially assumed it was at Dylan's, but yeah. What do I want to say about this? Because we do see, I mean, we spoil shit, and it's not, this has been on in the trailers, that Jess Riley is going to hand Chief Carter something, a picture. And then next week, we saw where Chief Carter was like, get Mayor on the phone now.
Yeah.
So Jess is going to give more information from the cops. She's just piecemealing this shit, though. Is what annoys me.
Us out. We need to get in it.
It's fucking annoying. All right. So we cut to the police at the residence where our prowler is. We find out that it's Dennis, an old guy named Dennis, who is 77 years old. He has dementia, and Chief Carter is just basically tells Dennis's wife, we're going to take care of this. You know, you got to understand that there's a killer out and blah, blah, blah. And his wife's like, well, why would say 77? Why would he? And after he gets through with her, he lights into Mayor's ass and says, he gets in her shit. And he's like, you need to go home. And she's like, but I was, he's like, you got to go. You need to go home.
Yeah.
So then we cut to Deacon Mark in the bathroom back at the rectory, cleaning himself up. He's crying. Father Dan is checking him. He's like, Mark, you know, he's like, leave me alone. And he's crying. And Father Dan's looking at him. He's like, hey, he's like, whoa. And then he just puts it all out there. He admits that he was with Aaron the night that she was killed. He picked her up from Sharp's Woods, and she put her bike in the back of the trunk. In the back of the car, and she was going to take her home, but she wanted to go to Brandywine Park because she got a call and she was hysterical. So he took her to Brandywine Park, and Father Dan just flat out asked, say, hey, did you kill her? And then Deacon Mark's like, if I say no, would you believe me? and then we cut. And then that's the end of that scene. Your thoughts, Leah, on that?
I think that, you know, he had to come clean. He was, it was obviously like very human where he's like, I did all this because it looks bad. Like I already, yeah. I already got in trouble for this thing I didn't do. And people already have ideas about me and I'm trying to get out. I was trying to escape those thoughts that people had about me. And now there's more people having those, you know, and it really seemed like a man genuinely feeling like he was trying to do the right things, mm-hmm. you know, for like younger people. And it looking bad and how it just keeps coming back on him. And so he knew that he did the wrong thing and he's just totally coming clean. And I kind of felt like the unanswered question of, if I told you I didn't do it, would you believe me? I think the answer is that guy does believe him now mm-hmm. that he didn't do it.
Yeah, I don't think he did either.
Now that he's honest about it, now that he admits to it.
He just got caught up though. It probably would have been better for him at the beginning. He's like, you know, look, we were friends. I was, you know, it looks bad. I know it looks bad, but I didn't, you know.
Oh, it would have been way better. It's always better. People always, every time people try to cover something up, it's always worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because then once people are like, why are you lying then?
Yeah.
Because people will find out. There will be something that gets you caught. And the longer you wait, but I think we know why he.
Yeah, we know why. We know the motivation. Yeah, totally. So we're back at the Zabel house, the Zabel residence. His mom is telling him, you know, hey, just, you know, be careful out there. You know, I know you like Mayor, but basically she just wants to be around you for the case. And I see the way you look at her and, you know.
Also, you were totally right. He obviously does live at home. He's not just visiting.
That's like kind of maybe
she's like making his coffee.
Maybe after he broke up with his ex, his fiance, maybe he moved back in with his mom. What do you think?
I don't think I remember that and the conversation about that enough to have, but I think he definitely lives there now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Basically, you know, she's just saying, be careful. And says, my whole life I've been careful and look where that's gotten me. You know,
what a precursor to what comes.
Yeah. And he's
foreshadowing.
Definitely. And he's kind of depressed too.
Yeah. It's like he's lives with his mom and she makes his coffee and he doesn't eat adventurous foods. And he, you know, he's like, I need to shake it up. I want to do something that's not, you know, the rules.
Yeah. Yeah. So you hear a honk outside and it's Mayor. Mayor is coming to pick him up and he goes out, almost forgets his coffee. And Mayor is being stared down by Zabel's mom. I love that. Mayor's like, fuck you. She doesn't care. You can look like at me all you want.
Blowing out her vape pen.
Yeah. She's like, I don't care what you think of me. I'm trying to solve this case. So they go to the Mayor picks them up. They go to the diner to see Tammy again. And she's with a girl who may know the kidnapper. She was going to turn a trick on this guy. And basically, we basically see that she's about to hook up with this dude and he starts choking her, which is much like how Missy got abducted. But she escaped. And she says it was a white guy with a beard who smoked Winston's. And he had a blue work van and she took down some of his license plate. So she had a partial plate reading. Zabel calls it in, says it's going to take about 2 hours. So Mayor and Zabel are waiting by the bridge. Beautiful, beautiful location, if I must say, by this bridge, under a bridge, kind of like this bridge or whatever. What do you call that? It almost looks like Navy Pier, but there's a bridge out there.
Right. It's just like a I don't know if it's a park, but it's a parking lot that's like at the bottom of a bridge.
Yeah.
By a sound of some sort.
Yeah, there you go. So Mare tells Zabel that she's sorry for the other night and she can't give him what he wants. Her life's a shit show. And even though she says, basically, even though she got kicked off the case, it's still hers. And she's basically like, you get beside the case. Like it just kind of, it's kind of fucking with you and you can't figure it out. And then that's where Zabel admits that he didn't really solve the Upper Darby case. The family of the missing girl hired a PI because the police department wasn't working fast enough. And the PI contacts him and says, hey, I got a lead on this. I think you should check this out. And he just kind of blows him off. And a couple weeks later, he gets stuck. And then he goes to meet the dude, goes to his place and finds out that he's not there anymore. His sister's cleaning out his place because the PI is in hospice. And she said, you could take any file that you want, anything you want, you can have it. And he finds a file that has his name on it, has Zabel on it. He looks at the information and is able to solve the case because the PI cracked it and he took the credit for it. And then Mare asked why he took the credit. He said he just wanted to do something great. And she tells him about planting the drugs on Carrie. And she says, doing something great. She tells him, doing something great is overrated because people expect that from you all the time. And they don't realize that you're just as screwed up as them. And Zabel gets a call. They find 7 matches on blue vans that were around the night of Aaron's murder. And he kisses Mare and says, how do you know what I want? And Mare fucking liked it.
Yeah,
she smiled. Did. She liked it. And now we get like a mini. What did you think of that? That scene? How did you feel about that scene?
Well, I thought it was from the pickup, like that was with the stare down with the mom. And then she was like, thanks for coming with me. And he's like, yeah, I'm the detective on the case. And she's like, oh, yeah, of course. I thought that was like a nice. Like he was reminding her sort of the hierarchy. You're sort of off the case now. And,
yeah.
And she was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Like she was like, you're right. You know? And then, so I felt like that was sort of them finding a middle ground because they're still going to go together, but he's like, just acknowledge that I'm on the case.
Yeah.
And then I also liked that he was she's like, sorry about that. And he's like, don't be sorry. You know, it just, you were saying what you wanted. Mm-hmm. And then, the scene with the girl was great because we know that the other people got strangled. They don't.
Yeah,
and then also how she remembered that he smoked Winston's because her grandmother smoked those.
Yeah.
And it's so true because I can tell you the one person I've met in my whole life that smoked Winston's because they're such a particular cigarette.
My uncle used to smoke them too.
Right. It's a friend of mine's mom used to smoke them. You just know people who smoke Winston. Mm-hmm. And then that was like a great scene. I thought that girl did a great job.
Yeah. Really good actors.
Really good. And the teenagers or young adults are all knocking it out of the park.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then like you felt how scared she was and like she just has to work and she was like trying to protect herself. And then he calls it in. And then that, yeah, scene by the bridge was like, you know, they're both sharing these things that they did wrong and sort of absolving. I think him telling her that he did this sort of, he clearly hasn't told anyone, sort of alleviates it in many ways. Cause she's like, we all fucking do stupid shit, you know?
Yeah.
And that kiss, you know, there was the kiss and then they paused afterwards where you could tell where she was like, that was a nice surprise, you know? And
yeah. You're
like, and you could tell that was him being like, I want to do something that's, you know, I'm not following all the rules. You know, I'm going to take my chances. So you're like, good for him. You're like excited that he did something that, you know, was outside of his being afraid to try zucchini. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And I also want to say, you made me think of the fact that in the previous scene, the girl mentions Hillary. Wait, no, who mentions Hillary?
Someone Mare does.
Mare mentions Hillary Castle
at dinner.
At dinner. And that's the Hillary that we talk about, that Katie and Missy talk about, that got that got pregnant and who's probably dead. So there's a mini montage of them, of Zabel and Mare asking folks about the blue van. And then they get to this house, Wayne Potts's house. And
his music is so loud, like, got, it's like, the way to look guilty.
Like my neighbor downstairs. Judas Priest, you got another thing coming, blaring all through the house. And we see, as they walk in, we see that the sign to Benny's Tavern. And they ask him, you know, hey, can you said, you know, tell us about the Ford cargo van. Is, and he says, oh, it's been nothing but a headache. This is Potts, Wayne Potts, saying it's been nothing but a headache since he got it. The music's playing loud. They asked him to turn it down. He goes upstairs or wherever to turn it down. Then that's when you see the camera pan to the ashtrays, and they're like, there's the Winstons. He's like, Mayor, the Winstons. And she reaches for her gun, but she doesn't have it. She says, no gun. And so he unclips his gun belt. He unclips the gun from his holster and getting ready. And then we cut to Potts getting ready to come back downstairs. He grabs his gun and he comes downstairs and they ask him about the bar. He says, oh, you know, it was my uncle. He had it for about 20 years. He wanted to give it to his son, but his son didn't want it and turned it over to him in 2016. And it sound gets kind of inaudible, and he tells him he makes deliveries for somebody. And that's when we cut to Missy and Katie hearing people talking, and Katie notices that, okay, there are people in the house talking and they're not tied up, which means that Potts, Wayne Potts, wasn't expecting anybody to be there. So they start rattling on the pipes. And they, you know, obviously Mare and Zabel hear it.
It's so loud.
Yeah, it was like loud as fuck. It was like, yes. Because that's like the first time in a long while, at least, that I've heard like people that have been captured banging on something, making noise. And then the people, the heroes, can actually hear the shit. You know what I mean? And they say, what's going on?
Because Katie's been paying attention. She's like, somebody came here. Obviously, he didn't know.
Yeah.
She's been waiting. You know what I mean?
She's been there for a year.
A chance.
She knows the routine.
Like, here it is.
Yeah. And so they're rattling, banging on the pots. Mare looks up. They both look up. And then Mare looks and sees a camera. And she says, oh, what's up with that camera? And he's like, well, it's just for, you know, for people that come in the bar just to check, you know. But he says, do you live alone? He says, yeah, I'm here by my lonesome. And the noise gets louder and louder. And
he's like trying to hold it.
He's trying like, to hold it.
Thing. It's just a thing.
Yeah. And it's like the radiator, blah, blah, blah. And then Mare's like, Zabel. And Zabel's about to reach for his gun. He gets popped in the head by Wayne.
Oh, and it's such a violent headshot, too.
Yeah.
Like, no.
It's like, damn, he's a really good shot.
Well, it's also like, also he says radiator.
Radiator, yeah. But yeah, I was like, wow, what a shot also, Chris.
I was like, as soon as he says it that way, you should have pulled your gun. You know what I mean? Well, it was like such mounting tension with the fucking radiator pipes getting louder and louder, and he's holding on, and you're like, somebody pull a gun. He's gonna.
Oh, shit. Oh, man. So he gets shot in the head.
Oh.
He's dead. Mares runs away. She runs upstairs. She gets shot in the left hand.
Yeah, she takes one, and she's coming out the running through the door. She gets hit.
She gets hit, and she's running away. As she runs, she notices that the Missy and Katie are alive and they're trapped upstairs in a soundproof room, and she tells them to be quiet. She's trying to get her bearings. She, throughout this sequence, she's looking at the camera. She says, okay, I bet he probably knows where I'm at. Potts, they cut to him looking at his iPhone. Mayor calls the text the police department, text 911 to the police department for backup, tells them her location. She
so together that she could just text that so calmly, you know what
yeah.
I mean?
And I would have been like, oh my God. But she was, you know, she was scared. You could tell that she was scared, but she was still poised.
Yeah.
And
they really I felt the fear in that
scene. Yeah. Right. And so she finds a place to hide. And she grabs like a pan or something. And he's shooting through the doors, through the other room. And he can't find anything. And he comes into the room. Mayor clocks him upside the head and he falls down. But this motherfucker is like the Terminator. He gets up, chases her downstairs. Mayor trips on the stairs and runs. And during that sequence, she can look from the top and see that she sees Zabel's dead body and she also sees his gun. I forgot to mention that. But she's running downstairs. She trips on the stairs. She goes into the entrance, the foyer, if you will, grabs Zabel's gun, shoots Potts about 5 times. He's dead. The police are coming. She's out of breath, slumped down in the doorway, and she hears, she's thinking of Kevin as a little kid on his birthday.
From the original video that we saw.
Right. From Siobhan's documentary.
Which she did think of it one more time in the middle, and then it cut to a montage of her in therapy. So it's like a reoccurring memory.
That's right. We get the montage of her in therapy. Yep.
That was scene was so breathless. Like, he's right behind her.
Yeah. He was coming. And I'm so glad she killed him. She got him.
And she only grabbed the gun with one hand. So you're like, and she just got it off. And
yeah.
Like, oh my God. It was so scary. Like, I felt it.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we get this song called Holding by a grouper. And that's the closing song. And it's a blackout.
I was so mad. I knew it was going to be the end because, you know, so much just happened. But I was like, I need one more scene. You know, I feel so shaken.
And when we talked last night after the show, I said, oh, man, I was right. They're going to get Aaron and Missy back.
You nailed it. You totally nailed it.
Yeah, that was good. I felt good about that because I felt like I just kind of felt that was going to happen. And then, you know, based on what we've seen in the trailers or in the promos and stuff, like, I feel like obviously Richard's going to come back and he's bringing her some hoagies and her arm is bandaged up. Her left hand. Wait, she shoots. Yeah. Her left hand is bandaged up and he's checking on her. And yeah. And then we get the stuff with she's going to be back on the force. Obviously they let Hauser go. So it's Mayor's got full reign over the case, and they're gonna figure some shit out. She's gonna question Dylan.
For sure, she's gonna run that DNA on Billy's bottle. I think
probably, yeah. And Billy's
or gonna, she's gonna tell him that she did, and he'll fucking admit to it.
They've got to get Billy Shady's ass. They got to get Billy Shady ass.
Yeah, it's like there's multiple things happening. For sure, Dylan did something. For sure, Billy's, you know what I mean? And then the guy who was like keeping the girls was completely separate. So it's like all these different, you know, and then there's going to be Mare's sort of reconciliation with her family and what happened with Kevin and her processing as a mother, which I think is going to be a whole other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. Do you think we'll find out who killed Aaron
in the next one?
In the next one? Or we find out who the father was?
I think we'll find out one of the two.
Yeah.
Or maybe we won't. Maybe they'll save that all. But I do think we will get Katie Bailey's mom.
Yeah.
Getting to see that her daughter's alive.
Dawn. Yeah.
which will be, I need that so bad for her. And then also probably it will be countered with Colin Zabel's mother.
She's going to blame Mayor for his death. She's going to be so upset. Yeah.
And, you know, how they give us the final things, because there's going to be the emotional family stuff, but then there's also going to be the, you know, is Siobhan going to go to college, or, you know, or her and or her ex-husband going to make up in some way? Or is she going to keep nailing Guy Pierce, you know, which I hope so. And just for the fans. And, you know, then we've got Billy, and then we've got, you know, horrible, horrible Dylan. So.
Yeah, I think they're going to, the penultimate episode is usually the most intense. And
where last night was really intense. So it's like, are we going to be more intense than last night?
I know, but since this is a mini series, I think we're going to get, it's not always, but I think we're going to get to the bottom of at least one of the two things. And I don't
I just don't know which one it's going to be.
Yeah. It's almost like I think that they would get the killer first, and then, or maybe if Billy did it, they might have did both. I don't know.
I don't think Billy would kill his best friend's kid.
His cousin's kid. You're cousin's right.
Kid. He may.
Wait a minute. You're right. So Billy's the dad, and then we've got to figure out who killed. But it could have been an accident too, the murder.
It could have been an accident, but it's still a murder that somebody covered up.
Yeah. No doubt. I almost want to go with what you just said, though. Then Dylan's hiding in plain sight. If we go with your theory, Billy's a dad. He wouldn't kill his cousin's kid. Then Dylan killed Aaron. When Brianna couldn't account for him.
Yeah. He did something
that night. Yeah. Because like people were saying, talking about The Undoing, we knew it was Hugh Grant the whole time. Basically.
But we wanted to believe that it wasn't.
We wanted to believe that it wasn't because it's Hugh Grant. And see, and that's
charming.
And that's because everybody thinks just because Guy Pierce is a star, he has to do something bad.
My gut tells me that he's just there as a vehicle for us to get to know Mayor.
I agree with you, because we said that weeks ago.
If he did it, it would really be a full, because he seems too far from the case in any way.
Yeah. He doesn't have anything. He doesn't know the town.
And I don't feel like he's angry at women. I feel like he likes female
attention. He likes female attention. What kind of killer goes to get subs from two different places and brings them to you in a basket? That's what you're going to see that either. We're going to see that scene next week.
I don't think he did it, you know, no. But I also am a huge Guy Pierce can do no wrong in my eyes.
I know you watched a movie of his that was 20% on Rotten Tomatoes.
People are so mad. I love how they're mad at him. They're pretty confused. They're like, why would you do this to us? I'm like, because he had a good time. He got to play a sheriff and, you know, save a town and kiss a pretty girl. Why would he not?
Who wouldn't want to do that? You know,
one person was like, I don't even think that kind of woman's his type. And I was like, it's acting.
Yeah. Damn. They were really mad.
They're so mad. I was like, you guys.
That's fun. What's the name of the movie?
Disturbing the Peace.
Okay. Was Ludacris in it?
No.
Sorry, just a joke.
Oh.
I probably wouldn't get that, but yeah. A couple of people are gonna get it.
Well, what I actually is interesting is that right after I watched that movie, I feel really ashamed about this. I was a very big Steven Seagal fan. And now I know that he like loves Putin and stuff. So I'm not allowed to like him anymore. But he did a movie with DMX that I have on VHS.
Oh, shit. Taking it back.
That I watched.
The late, great DMX.
God, give me a sign. And so you, that was a movie hole I went into last night.
You still got a VHS player?
Yeah.
Damn. I got a combo TV.
Well, it's a VHS DVD.
Oh, but still, damn.
And I carried it till I brought it to Los Angeles. Not only do I have it, I had limited amount of boxes. I got rid of clothes to keep my VHS player. So
old school. I appreciate it. I'm a media driven guy too. I'm an old media guy.
I just love it. And it still has that like not still. It now has like a line down the side in the corner.
Mm.
The VHS player, because it's like holding on.
Even though they still make, I think they're kind of, are they expensive now? Part of me feels like they're kind of expensive.
You get them on eBay.
Okay, because I wonder, I'm going to look this up on Amazon. VCR
player. What's funny about Steven Seagal movies is as he gets older, like he still has all these like young beautiful women in all of his movies, but in all the love scenes he keeps his jacket on.
He keeps the jacket on and the girl's all naked.
Like, yeah. You're like, Steven, what is going on here?
Steven, you go, oh, they still have, damn. Sony SLV DVD VCR turnerless progressive scan.
I have
combo player from 2009, $339.
Holy shit. I have a Panasonic
DVD-R. I don't see. Damn.
I'm gonna turn the video so you can see it.
Oh, okay. Just okay.
Let me... I'm plugged into everything, so I don't know. I don't know if I can turn this. That's the record player.
Yeah, the record. But vinyl's cool now.
There, do you see it?
Oh yeah, yeah. I remember those. I was gonna think you had the cart with the that the teacher brings out.
Yeah, as a throw a video on for the class.
Yeah, when she's tired to teach, or a man.
Or a man. Or remember those things where you put it in the rewinder thing and rewound it so fast?
Yeah, I never had those, but I remember them.
I had a friend that had one.
Wow, that was hardcore.
Yeah, hardcore.
I still got some in my parents' house that my mother would love for me to get rid of. So most intense episode, we kind of had some theories. I like what you said. I think I'm kind of going with that. Billy's a dad. Dylan, I mean, you gotta say he's the killer until we're proven wrong.
Yeah, and it could have been a mistake, but he still
did it.
Piece of shit.
Yeah, because he just became for two episodes. He's like, you know, he kind of. I didn't feel sorry for him, but I would just say he was humbled, and now he's back to being a supervillain after he got out the hospital.
Supervillain, trash. Yeah.
Flipping his bangs, as you say.
I hate the way he flips. It's perfect. This actor's nailing it. But every time he flicks his bangs, I'm like, this guy thinks he's fucking untouchable.
Yeah, what is this dude's name? Jack Mulhern.
Oh, I mean, not the actor. The actor's nailing it, but the character. Yeah. I'm just so angry, and I'm so angry for teenage girls everywhere.
Yeah, how do you feel about this, like, as a woman? When, I mean, we both love these detective shows, but the way that, like, teenage girls are getting treated in this. And then, you know, if you want to be expansive and talk about, like, in media.
I think this is very, you know, these young girls who have to make money, who have to pay bills. They're, like, holding up families. You know what I mean? They got their drunk dads and their boyfriends that won't help cover the bit. You know what I mean? You're like, they're trying really hard to make it work with what they can do. You know what I mean? And then I feel like they're being manipulated by older men. Mm. And I think that's very realistic.
Yeah. I agree. I just want to know what you think, because I'm seeing some writers kind of, I'm seeing men do it. I don't know if they're trying to placate people by just bringing that up, but it was just something that came up where, you know, it just makes you want to, because I would be in it. I would, like, we talk about this all the time. I'd love to be a detective, a troubled detective in a series like this.
Oh, it's a fantastic character.
Yeah.
Oh, we're talking about Mare. I thought you were talking about the young girls.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying, like, in playing the guy, I'm gonna find the guy that did this shit. You know what I mean?
It's great because it's like a woman. So she, in many ways, is she's damaged, but she's still a role model. She's still gonna fucking fight through it. She's gonna do what's right. She's gonna stand up for people. She's also not judgmental. She's like friends with the ladies of the night. She's like trying to help them out, help them feel safe. You know what I mean?
Yeah. What do you think about this too? Damn it. I just had the thought in my head. It's like, oh shit. Oh my God. I just had the thought. Oh, this is what I want to say. So I like to read and what I like to read articles about the show and people on YouTube, the recaps and things like that. And even one of, I don't want to mention and talk bad about a certain YouTuber, but this one YouTuber I think is great. Like, I sent you some of the clips last night and I was like, this is great. This person is really good. But then people trying to assign morality to fictional characters and like trying to be sanctimonious about morality. It's like if Mare was a completely pristine and perfect person, the show would be fucking boring.
It's boring. It's also not realistic.
Yeah, like because she planted the planting the drugs on Carrie was obviously wrong. But
she knows it's wrong.
She knows it's wrong. And Carrie's an asshole.
And also, there's no redemption if the character is not flawed.
Exactly. I hate when people do that with media. Like they did that with my favorite video game series, The Last of Us, where, you know, in the bubble, you're playing the video game or you're watching the show. You're enjoying this experience of dealing with these flawed characters and trying to have some type of redemption or just enjoying it for what it is as art. But then other outside entities are trying to label it by saying, I like Mare, but I can't get behind her because of that heroin thing.
Well, it's like, that's so, I mean, I disagree with that. That's the point of the character. She did wrong. Also, a lot of times I tend to think that when women do things, people are like, you're not allowed to have that because as women, you need to be more good. You know, it's like a gift that you get to be flawed. You know what I mean?
And it's like it's exactly like we were talking about last night when I'm hearing all this shit about her, the dialect, the Delco dialect. And it's like, you're not saying, and these were women that were talking bad about her. Oh, you know, I could kind of get past the dialect. Like, yo, she's tried it. She's doing it well.
I think she nailed it. Also, she doubles down on it. People have stronger accents than other people. That's normal.
Yeah. And I saw, like I told you last night, I watched this really great movie called Our Friend. And I talked about it on my podcast, on the main feed. No, I talked about it on the Patreon. Really good movie about a woman who has terminal cancer. She's going to die and she's married. And then their best friend from college moves in with them to help them, you know, make their life better while this thing is happening. Casey Affleck, Dakota Johnson, and Jason Segel. It's set in Alabama. Neither one of them really tried to do an accent. Like, y'all didn't try? Or were you guys, like, told to not do one?
I think they were probably told to not do one.
Maybe that was it. And it didn't have to be like, hey, I got cancer. You know what I mean? It's not, I don't know. I've seen so many movies where they're set in a specific location. And it's like they don't. I was like, y'all not going to try. Y'all aren't going to try.
People on the internet are crazy. I think that's why people don't try, because people on the internet come out. I'm like, oh, that wasn't exactly right. You're like, you know what? It's kind of hard to do this shit.
Yeah. So I don't know. That's just something I've been noticing. I mean, for a long time, as far as like morality is concerned, where it's a fucking TV show. Like, we like it. Yes, we're being nerds and we're recapping the show, but give me a break, man.
But also, it's not like the writers of the show or anybody in that show thinks that what she did was right.
Right.
That's the whole point.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to be able to have it. What, are we only going to have people do right things in shows? How is that going to be something we want to watch?
Yeah. And you can't look at the flashbacks of Carrie and Kevin being pieces of shit to Mare.
Being like violent,
terrorizing her. It's like, fuck you, bitch. Like, you just said my son that killed himself hated me.
Yeah. You can't. And
I'm going to let you take my grandbaby.
Yeah. She thinks she's saving her grandchild's life.
Right.
That's and why she does it.
It's like, if I'm gonna keep my family together, and you're not gonna get in the way of that.
Yeah, which is a strong motivation.
Right, right.
You don't have to agree with what she did, but I understand the motivation.
Yeah, that's just something that, like, I had a buddy in grad school that used to say, he's from Texas, and he said, that really chapped my ass.
I love it.
All right, Leah. Well, anything else you want to say about the show, about this episode?
No, it was a great episode. I've also had such a great time chatting with you that I put off that I have to pee. So,
okay. Well, Leah, you need to go pee. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. We got two more episodes to go. Hit us up on Twitter. You can hit us up on mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com and your thoughts. Let us know what you think and your predictions. And we'll talk to you next time. Take it easy, everybody.
Take it easy.